first conversation in this particular hour. It's prompted by a very honest listener who phoned in last week who said he was an anti-vaxxer and now he's not anymore. And he was clear. He didn't say vaccine hesitant. He said anti-vaxxer. And he said what changed was his mother got deathly ill. And it was quite an admission to make, because what he didn't say was my science changed or I learned something new. His experience changed. His closeness to the disease changed. His not just proximity, but the visibility of the ravages of disease came to a person he cared about. And it made me start asking the question whether or not we need to have a psychological conversation about this, because what it means is potentially, or is I'm asking the question, is anti-vax attitude related to having a lack of empathy? It shouldn't have to come to your house for you to care with your mother. And so we've invited postdoctoral fellow in philosophy at the University of Milan, Anna Aquino as well, who has together with Lisa Bortolotti of the University of Birmingham written a very interesting piece about the mindset of an anti-vaxxer and what kind of motivates, having done a study themselves. Anna, welcome to Breakfast with Refilwe. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. It seems like it's irrational to us, but you say there may be a very basic human need being fulfilled here.
Yes, sure. Good morning, everyone. It's nice to be here. So, yes, I mean, of course, sometimes conspiracy theories that drive no-vax attitudes look quite crazy and bizarre. They have strange contents. And indeed, there is a temptation to make a parallel with paranoid delusions, and many people think they are just crazy. And there are some similarities, surface similarities between conspiracy theories and paranoid delusions. They are both bizarre and both they are quite impervious to counter evidence and hard to change. But on the other hand, as you mentioned, our research shows that conspiracy theories often arise to satisfy some important needs and psychological motives that we all share, that are not just peculiar to conspiracist thinkers. Like one very important, which is at the basis of conspiracy theorizing and the attraction to conspiracy theories, is a desire and the need for control. It's a time of uncertainty. We are all like, we don't know what's happening. We lose our jobs, our life changes massively. And conspiracy theories, in a way, are maybe a means to restore a feeling of control. Blaming someone, finding a culprit, may be a way in which somehow we regain control upon our messed up life. That's one, just one example. There are other needs, existential or epistemic, a need for understanding. Again, it's a time of uncertainty. Even experts don't have answers for us. And sometimes conspiracy theories can provide sure and solid answers that like help us to navigate the world and know what's going on, even if, of course, often the answers are the wrong ones. But they give us something to think about and to to navigate and find our way.
Certainly.
There's a need which is quite important associated to conspiracy theorizing is the need for uniqueness. You feel you are in possess of some information that other people lack. You are unique and you know something that makes you feel special somehow. That's another. And these are all needs that we all have. So in this sense, conspiracy theories arise from universal psychological mechanism, and we are all prone to forms of motivated reasoning, and we all try somehow to satisfy these sorts of needs. Then, of course, in the case of conspiracy theories, there is something more, because there is also a strong and deep-rooted mistrust in authorities and institutions that make people reject the official information and look for radically different alternatives. And this is part of the problem, but at least part of the psychological mechanisms underlying them are common and shared, so you can't write them off as simply crazy or mad.
Certainly not. I think there's a rationality here that we need to get to the bottom of. But here's the difficulty that I have, Anna. So with the power of all three of those drivers, and often conspiracy theorists or anti-vaxxers, and it doesn't have to just be anti-vaxxer. It could be anti-climate crisis. It could be, you know, climate crisis deniers,
sure.
COVID-19 deniers,
sure.
People who resist progress in social constructs, like gender rights, racial rights. First of all, they all seem to sit in the same bench, but often. And it's the moment of change for me. So like this caller who said to us, somebody close to me that I love was affected and I dropped all of it. He didn't need to be convinced out of the things that he was convinced into. He just needed to see it. We hear reports
yes.
from Alabama where vaccine levels are very, very low, the least vaccinated state in the United States, where medical professionals say it is on their deathbeds that they say, I had no idea. And all of the ration that they speak of goes out the window, and they beg for the vaccine. And it seems as though it requires personal impact, right? So that's why I'm asking the question around empathy. It is not sufficient for you to hear that somebody else is in pain. In fact, sometimes they attack people who are grieving on social media, grieving those who have been affected by COVID-19. But as soon as it hits their home closely, none of the debate exists any longer.
Yes, I don't think actually that in general we can just say that people who refuse vaccination or are anti-vaxxer lack empathy. I think, again, we should go back to what I said before about the lack of trust in institutions and authorities. Like, conspiracy theories arise often in situations of sort of marginalization of people who have some reason, maybe based on their past experience, to mistrust the official person, to mistrust scientists and the healthcare providers. They might have had bad experiences with them and have been disappointed in the past. And this mistrust is so hard, like so deep-rooted, that they see pain around them. It's not that they don't feel empathy, but they seek for different explanations. They don't believe it's the virus. They see people in pain, and they might well empathize. They are not different from us in terms of psychological capacities and empathy. They just have a strong motivation to look for different explanations for the same things that we see. So I think it would be, and this is why the actual way to change their mind is a long-term intervention to restore trust and confidence in healthcare providers and in medicine and in authorities and institutions. That, I think, is the reason why it looks as if they lack empathy, but I don't think I wouldn't give this explanation. I think that somehow uncharitable. I think they suffer and empathize like the rest of us, although they have such a deep motive to reject the official view that they look for alternatives. So they say, okay, people die in the hospital because there are cures, but healthcare providers don't want to provide them. Or explanation which admittedly look crazy and we should do something to change their mind. I'm not saying they are right, but I would resist the idea that they lack empathy. I would say rather that they have strong motivation to look for unorthodox explanations, if you see what I mean.
In your article, on a positive note, you highlight that they tend to be very strong seekers of hope and explanation.
Yes. In a way, conspiracy theories might, as I was saying before, they promise to fulfill psychological needs and hopes and what people are looking for. So people look for explanations that help them to feel better somehow. So in a way, again, finding someone who is who we can blame for what is going on can, ironically, make us hopeful that things can be changed. So we are in a time of uncertainty. It seems that we can't do nothing in order to feel better, but if we identify a culprit, we can somehow start looking for improvement, because we can go there, punish her or him, and find a way to improve our situation. So in this sense, somewhat indirect conspiracy theories can help us to fulfill our hopes, if you see what I mean.
I do, Anna, I do. And I, you know, the long-term solution is going to be difficult to find in these times. You know, this long-term solution to trust.
Sure.
Because we're all learning as we're going along. But yeah, in the meantime, countries are closed. But really appreciate this perspective, Anna, and your piece on this, yours and Lisa's. Anna Ichino is postdoctoral fellow in philosophy at the University of Milan. You can read her piece that she wrote with Lisa Bortolotti, "Conspiracy Theories May Seem Irrational, But They Fulfill a Basic Human Need." That was in The Conversation late last